Welcome to another episode of Living an Altar Life. My name is Mike, I'm your host, and this week I am co-hosting with my forever girlfriend, and we're going to talk about Cape Fear recap a little bit, but then we're also going to talk about something that altar running couples probably never talk about, and that's how we both look at altar running. And we're just going to go very uncensored, and so you're going to get both of our opinions. So let's welcome in the ever vivacious and beautiful forever girlfriend, Jenny.
Thanks so much, Mike. It's great to be here.
So let's look at Cape Fear 24 Hours. Went into Cape Fear 24 Hour, and I was going to be doing my first ever ultra walk, and I was shooting for 100 miles. And it was a beautiful day, except it got kind of warm in the afternoon, so that was not beautiful. But Jenny Horner was crew chief extraordinaire, and she did amazing during the day. So I'm going to kind of let her talk about how she went into Cape Fear 24 Hour.
So this was our fourth Cape Fear 24 Hour. The first one I didn't really want to be at, and it downpoured the night before the race, and the entire brand new tail veil was full of water when I got there on Saturday morning, having spent the night at a girlfriend's house the night before. And so that kind of ruined the mood of the day. And then I didn't pay any attention to Mike, and I talked to my girlfriend all day. The second Cape Fear 24 Hour, it downpoured the entire night before, the entire day of the race, and I just sat in the tail veil angry, talking to my girlfriend the whole day, and mad that I had to break down a wet tent, hang a wet tent in my very small one-bedroom apartment living room to try and dry it out, and then fold it up and put it away. The third Cape Fear 24 Hour was even worse. It was even wetter. It was more disgusting. Everything was completely drenched. And once again, I was just hiding in my van, miserable the whole time. This year, Mike decided to do walking. And for some reason, his decision to try for 100 miles as a walker made way more sense to me than his attempts to run 100 miles in 24 hours ever before. Because anyone knows by doing the math that in order to get 100 miles in a 24-hour race, the racer has to keep up a sub-15-minute per mile for 24 hours. I think this is absolutely, totally, and completely ridiculous, and don't know why anyone in their right mind would try to do such a thing.
So with that, can you guess which one of us is the ultra runner and which one of us is the ultra running spouse? So like Jenny said, this was our fourth Cape Fear, and this was probably the best weather that we've had at Cape Fear because it didn't rain the night before. It didn't rain during. It got kind of hot in the afternoon. One of the first challenges I had to deal with was I had somehow chafed my right nipple the Sunday beforehand. I haven't dealt with chafed nipples like since I started running. So it was something totally weird. I thought that I had let it heal and thought that it was dealt with pretty well, but somewhere around about the second or third hour, all of a sudden I started going, ow, that's uncomfortable. So I stopped and used one of the restrooms along the way. And Cape Fear is probably one of the best race-directed races around. There are three different potty stops. Every time you go into a bathroom, there is Vaseline, there are wipes right there for you. I mean, Lisa McFadden and her volunteers do such a phenomenal job at Cape Fear. I'm picturing that this is going to be someplace that people start going to break records, because if you're wanting to get on the USA 24-hour team, Cape Fear is the place to do it, because you don't have to think about a thing. So anyway, my chest is starting to chafe a lot. So I came out of the restroom and smeared myself up with Vaseline, thinking that would do it. Jenny noticed, Which was, amazed me because, you know, this is the first time at any race where she's been very, very attentive to my needs, taking care of what I needed. She was constantly there, changing out my bottles, handing me a towel to wipe off. Well, she identified that I had problems. And so she told me to take my shirt off, took my shirt off, and she set to work addressing how to tape up a chafed nipple. I think the first attempt didn't quite work because we tried the nipplees, but I was, of course, in my Mike the excessive sweater mode, and it didn't stick. So the next turnaround, because you're only 0.58 miles away every time. So I'd go around for a circle, and so the next time around, she handed me a towel, and she said, hey, get all the Vaseline off. So I need you to get all the Vaseline off. So I went around again, wiping all the Vaseline off, scrubbing it off, and she hands me a dry towel. She goes, okay, this time dry above your chest and get it all dry. So I did that and came around. She said, okay, now dry the rest of it, and then I'll have something ready for the next time through. So the next time around, she had KT tape with a piece of moleskin already in it, and she slaps it on my chest, gets it all taped down, and good to go. I look like a goon, but it's okay. I went around again and came back, and she did like a cross. So now I've got two strips of KT tape on, which was really funny. Towards the end of the day, like right before I was getting ready to put on a shirt, this girl comes up beside me because I'm still walking pretty efficiently and effectively. I hadn't had any big blow-up miles or anything. And she said, so what type of injury do you have that you're using the KT tape on your chest? And it was pretty funny. I said, well, it's a chafed nipple. And she immediately sped up and went off. It was just one of those things, you just had to be there. But yeah, I hadn't told Jenny about that, so she's delighted in that. So we took the injury, the chafed nipple, and did a lovely cross on my chest, which will come into play by the end of the race. So Jenny did a fantastic job patching me up. And then I must have been around 3:34 in the afternoon. I just told her, I said, look, I know I said I wasn't going to sit, but I am done. I just need a 10-minute break. And yeah, I said three. And it was not a 3-minute break because my feet hurt. Everything hurt. I was miserable. I was hot. I was overheated. I was behind on calories. I knew I was behind on calories. And Jenny's doing everything she can. So she actually changed out my shoes. And if I had been wise and listened to my crew chief, I would have changed out socks. I was not wise and didn't listen to my crew chief, which will come into play here in a few minutes.
Okay, so this is one little tip from the Horner family. I don't know if it happens in your family, but when I suggest anything to my dear and wonderful husband, it is immediately dismissed as incredibly stupid. Therefore, to suggest as his crew chief that he change his socks, he was unable to receive that from me. That's a tip.
And it's a good tip because what you're hearing here is real things that happen. We've been married 38 years. We've been through a lot together. We have put up with a lot of differences in 38 years because we are entirely different people. Jenny likes to say that I am a object in perpetual motion, and she is an object in perpetual nap mode. And, oh yes, I'm sorry, in perpetual rest mode, not nap mode, rest, yeah. And so we're completely different animals, and so we have learned to actually listen to each other better, but we're not there yet, in case you think after 38 years of marriage that we're there and we've arrived and we have marital bliss that's just pouring out of our pores. Actually, I think that might be sweat that's pouring out of our pores. Oh, that's just sweat pouring out of my pores. But anyway, so Jenny's taking care of me. She also came up with a very wise idea to put ice in my soft flask, which was brilliant and worked very, very well. And she was very, very effective throughout the day. And so she did just a bang-up job of crew chiefing throughout the day. There were a couple little snafus, but that was more to do with a friend that wanted to talk a lot, and Ginny wasn't able to pay as much attention to me as she wanted to. But she did a great job. So I'm going to let her kind of talk about what her approach was during the day, knowing that now we're going into the nighttime.
Well, I'm going to go back just a little bit. The race is going splendidly. We have beautiful weather, as Mike has already said. And I noticed that he's got discomfort. Math is not my strong suit, but I did know if I needed to tend to his wound, it had to be really quickly and on the move. And when somebody sweats like Mike sweats, I didn't know what in the world I could possibly use that would stick to him at any point on his body. And I needed to do it really quickly in each path around. So I was really pleased with how quickly that got taken care of. But then, as he mentioned, it did get really hot. And it started getting hot around 10 a.m. And it just got hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. And it stayed hot until about 5 in the afternoon. Not a big deal to a lot of people, but definitely a Achilles heel for Mike. The heat and the humidity has always given him a hard time. And I didn't take that into consideration. I was still thinking, he wants to do this. He can do this. We haven't slowed down that much. He did ask for a 3-minute break at one point and got a 3-minute break. He asked for another 3-minute break and got another 3-minute break. And there were no breaks planned. There was a 24-hour walk planned, but the heat really got him. So coming in towards the evening, as I'm more tired from being on all day and being around people all day, which is not my strength, being around music playing all day, which is not my strength, and being active and moving all day, which is not my strength, I was starting to slow down. So I know as I went to get in the van at about 8 o'clock at night that he said, you know what, I'm not going to make the 100 miles. But I didn't receive it into my brain cells. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, when I woke up, I thought, haha, I'm up at 4, I'm getting up, I'm going to push him to the win. And I immediately set out to do math. Well, there's a really funny Saturday Night Live video about American freedom and measurements. But if you've ever tried to figure out 0.58 of a mile divided by 3 hours, just go ahead and tell me how you do that. When an hour is 60 minutes, I don't know why that I thought that had to be in the equation. But anyway, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was not able to do that. And Mike then told me that he would have to do 7-minute miles for the last 3 hours, and he wasn't going to make his 100 miles. And I was just like done with him. I'm like, this is the fourth time we've been here and you still can't do 100 miles. I mean, I was just like absolutely, totally, and completely done with him. And so I got a little snippy towards the end of the race. And then he wanted his picture taken for his personal best, which was going to happen before the end of the 24 hours. And so I was really irritated because why should I walk to the finish line and take a picture of him coming across the finish line, which wasn't his finish, to get his personal best when obviously at the end of the race, he was still going to have his personal best. So there you go.
Like I said, this is unfiltered, but this is reality. This stuff happens. I just think a lot of people don't talk about it. And I think it's important that we talk about what does it mean when you've got one ultra runner out there and one who, like Jenny has often said, she doesn't like to see it when I'm miserable and I'm suffering. That's a key thing. And I'm going to hand it back to her.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, Mike. So all of you racers out there, male or female, who want your spouse to crew you, you are expecting someone that loves you very much and cares very much about you to push you through the pain. Okay, so just liken that to, I love my husband, I'm going to take care of him, I'm a caretaker from birth, both of my parents were ill, so I just grew into it, I didn't have a choice. And so I'm a caretaker. It's what I do. So to care for my husband by pushing him to go further and watch him sweat and be in pain and have muscle spasms and all these other things, it's not pleasant for me at all in any way.
But that's what us ultra runners do. So we're pushing ourselves. And on this one, I pushed myself very hard. It became evident to me probably... I knew when Jenny was going to bed at 8:30 that I was going to have to either really, really speed up, which I was trying to envision how I could possibly speed up, knowing that I was behind on calories, knowing that this is a tall order. And I just, you know, I was like, all right, I don't know how I'm going to get to the point where I can get to 100 miles. I was a little disappointed because I was watching so many people just dominate and go over 100 miles. And I'm just like, what is wrong with me that I'm not as good as them? And I realized I walked. But I realized probably about 11:30 that, okay, it's time to just reset and realize that I can still set a personal best in 24 hours. So my personal best going in was 89.3 miles. And so I was like, all right, we're just going to reset the brain. We're just going to keep on moving for 24 hours. We're going to hit 90 miles and I'm going to be happy with it. So at that point, I was very focused all race and very not talking to people. And at that point, I became more friendly. I talked to everybody. I tried to encourage everybody that I came upon to keep on fighting, keep on going for it. Helped one of the runners do some ultra math and figuring out if somebody did this many miles per hour, how many laps could he pass him and not overtake him. And so I helped him do that ultra math, and he ended up not letting the guy pass him. So that was kind of cool. Just encouraging people, watching people get their first ever 100-milers. It was just so much fun watching the power couple of Hampton Roads, Jeff and Angela Jordan, both go over 100 miles as a couple. That was so exciting. Watching the two metronomes, Ruthie Cruz and Andrea McHugh, just totally dominate. And then, you know, the absolute treat of seeing Ruthie, Andrea, and Angela as the podium for the women was just, I mean, you know, that's amazing that, you know, you go down to Lillington, North Carolina, and three runners from Hampton Roads are the top three. So, yeah, a lot of exciting things happened at Cape Fear. I was very happy with my finish. And one of the reasons that we wanted to do this podcast is because I thought I had communicated that, yes, my A goal is 100 miles. However, if I at any point realize that I'm not going to hit 100 miles, I'm still going to be happy to break my personal best walking. And I thought I had communicated that to Jenny. I obviously did not communicate well enough because she didn't understand that. And so she was more crushed than I was at not hitting 100 miles.
The other issue was that with that is that this was the first race that I was invested in. I have been along on most of Mike's races for the past 10 years. I have sat on more windswept hills waiting for hours and hours and hours in the past 10 years than I would like to admit. But this was the first race that I was invested in being a part of. So it was my first DNF. So it was just quite the challenging finish. We did a completely different teardown routine than we usually do. That was also not well communicated and added to our stress and trauma. But we made it. We got home, and it was so ever so delightful to not have to drag everything out of the van immediately because everything was not soaked. And we just actually finished very calmly and slowly folding up all the tents completely dry. And they actually go back into their containers when they're folded up dry. It was so nice.
So, as many wrinkles as there were during the race, to me, there's been some really good blessings after it because Jenny and I have had some really good conversations about ultra running and racing and expectations. And so, you know, One of the things I think that's important to know as couples when you're going after these very, very hard things is for the runner, yes, it's very, very hard. But I've said this before, and I truly mean it. It's also very hard on your family, on your significant other, on your kids, if you have kids. It's very hard on them too, because they're watching you. And so for as much success as there is in going over 90 miles in 24 hours, I'm still excited about being able to do that. I finished 20th overall at Cape Fear. There were 1,900 mile finishers, so you do the math of who the first person was that didn't get 100 miles. But the thing that I'm most encouraged by is that, you know, Jenny and I communicated afterwards, and that was one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast, is that we communicated, we talked about, you know, what was going on. She allowed me this past week to recover, which, you know, for those of you who don't know, recovering from an ultra marathon is not just physical. It's also an emotional and a spiritual and a mental recovery. And you have to be willing to give your body, your mind, and your emotions the ability to recover. And Jenny allowed me to take a week and recover. Overall, it was a success, and we're looking forward to see how we do better in the future. And I think that's the thing, if we take away, is that we both know we have strengths and we have weaknesses. And one of the things that we have to realize is that we don't have to be the strength in our partner's weakness. We have to be willing to say, okay, where my partner is weak, I can let God be their strength and not judge them and not be critical of their weakness. And then we have to be willing to take a look at ourselves and do the same thing. Say, okay, in this area, I'm weak, but my God can be my strength in this area. I don't have to fix it. But what I have to be willing to do is identify the areas that I'm weak in, and then work to see, can I strengthen that? Or is it even something that I need to expend the energy to strengthen? And so I'm very encouraged by where we went with Cape Fear 24. Yes, we will sign up and we will do it again next year. And if it is rain, we're going to leave Jenny at home. We love Cape Fear and we're going to keep on going back for as long as Lisa McFadden will have us. So I'm going to let Jenny wrap it up with any of her final thoughts now.
I had a lovely conversation with a Brazilian wife that was there for her husband's first 100-mile finish, which he accomplished plus some. And she was shocked to find out that there are longer races and there are harder races and there are more races. Something that has been infinitely frustrating to me as a non-runner is thinking when he finishes this race, it will get out of his system. It never gets out of their system. Runners love to run for the runner's high that they get. They love to race the races because dopamine hits are the big talk of the town these days. And the runner gets a dopamine hit searching ultra running sites for the next race. They get a dopamine hit registering for the next race. They get a dopamine hit planning their clothing, buying their new shoes, buying their new gear, buying their new goo. The runner gets dopamine hits repetitively over and over and over and over that the running partner does not get. Please understand when your spouse is a little frustrated if your partner is not a runner. They aren't getting all the highs that you're getting repeatedly over the course of planning for a race.
Well said, Virginia Lee. So that's kind of a Cape Fear, little bit of a recap, but more of a, you know what? We're a real couple and we have real things that we deal with and we go through. And we just wanted to be real with you. So this has been the Living an Ultra Life Get Real episode. And we're very, very happy to put this behind us. And you know what? One of the biggest things, Jenny and I are partners in this podcast. I do the voicing and Jenny makes me sound good because she does all the editing. And so we're partners in this. This podcast is meant to provide an opportunity for you to hear from real people doing real stuff, going out there challenging themselves to do hard stuff, because one of the things I learned during COVID is I was not created to say I can't. I was created to say I can do all things through him who strengthens me. And I will forever stand on that. And I don't know what the limit is. And so, yep, I'm going to keep on pushing myself till I find out what the limit is. I am very honored that my wife joins me in these crazy things, willingly sometimes and unwillingly sometimes. But you know what? It's always, always, always a pleasure to see her face anytime during these things, because it encourages me, because I can't do life without her. And so I'm very, very honored that she still does life with me. So that'll do it for Living an Ultra Life. We thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this.
We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.